Just wanted to ask him about something that happened.
May 24th, 1982, talking to Henry Okada and Nevada.
I know
everything. You know what she's talking about, this one?
Oh, yeah.
No, I don't know my grandmother.
Well,
we'll
put down what you know, see, and then pretty soon we'll fill it in.
Yeah, and I'll ask me different ones, like, okay. And any of them, if you know, like, the Indian name instead.
No.
You don't know, okay.
Well, my father, you see, my father didn't talk native. All he talked was English. My mother had to talk English to us all the way through as we were raising, you see. So we didn't understand half of the native words, what you were saying, you know. You're lucky I know a few words. I understand a few words, you know. Because I sat around, listened to them old people talking, you know. But you couldn't listen to them when they start talking them high words. Like when my mother, she get the visitor, they talk to each other as a native, and we don't understand. You just sit there just like a stump, dumb stump, you know. So my father just walks out sometimes, you know, and he just sit aside and listen.
Did he speak Japanese?
Well, he didn't speak Japanese to us hardly, not with us, you know. We were too small, you know, yet when he passed away, you know, he heard it back.
Well, your mother, her name was Annie.
Annie, yeah.
Did she have any brothers or sisters that you know of?
No. She was married before my father. That's how Eddie Hildebrand is my half-brother. And I don't know where this Charlie came from, too. That's my half-brother. And Harry Brush is my half-brother. And Hattie was my half-brother, too. My half-sister, too.
Well, you said your mother was married to Billy Burt?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's Eddie's father there.
But then, how did Eddie get the name Eddie Hildebrand?
Well, that part, you know, I don't know, but Bill Burke was his father.
Somebody named Hildebrand raised
him? Yeah, but yes, he divorced, I guess, you know, he divorced. And my mother gave up Eddie. And Peter Smalka raised him.
From when he was a baby?
Yeah.
So that's Peter, Smalka,
yeah. Martha Joe, yeah.
But he kept the name Hildebrand.
Yeah.
And Smalka was Martha Joe's first husband.
Yeah, first husband, yeah.
But Harry Brush and Charlie Brush were raised by somebody else?
Yeah, Charlie Brush was raised by George Hathaway. And Harry Brush was raised in the mission, Holy Cross Mission.
And he went all the way through till he was...
Yeah, till he was...
But Charlie Brush wasn't down in Holy Cross?
No. He was raised up here.
And then Hattie Brush was raised
in the mission. In the mission, too. You see, my mother couldn't take care of them that time, you know, so she... The mission, Holy Cross Mission, was... taken just like an orphan kids down there, you know. There was a big mission there, Catholic mission there, so they were all raised up down there, see, so they until they get old enough to get on their own, you know.
And then Hattie married
to Hondor.
What was his first name?
Max Hondor. Max.
Is that senior?
Yeah.
Because there's another Max.
Yeah, that's Max Hondorf's son, that Max Hondorf. That was born and raised here after the move up here from Holy Cross, see. He was taking care of the weather station here. There was a weather station here. And he was taking care of that. Then he retired from that. Then he got a postmaster job. Postmaster died here. And then... he got that job, postmaster job, and then he retired from there, and then he moved to Anchorage. I don't know. He had a Maxi and Donald Hondor, Roy, Marie, and I don't know the other twin girl. He had two twin girls. He had about five or six kids here after they moved here.
That was with Hattie or another woman?
This was another woman. Rita Dementiv was her. Max Hondor's name. Second wife's.
Well, did he have any? Did they have any children with Hattie?
She had one, but I don't know her name. She died too.
And then Charlie Brush, did he have any children?
Yeah, he had two.
What was his wife's name?
Julia Brush.
What was her maiden name before she was married?
Julia Demovsky. Charlie's kids?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Lillian. That's the first girl she had. Then Billy Brush. Both of them are living right now. That's all he had, just two kids.
Lillian, what's her last name now?
She was married to Lillian Summers was her. That was her first husband's name. I know this last one, though.
So she's not
in the... No, she's living in Anchorage, no.
And Billy Brush, where's...
Billy Brush is staying in Galena now.
And he has any children?
Yeah, he's got a... Billy Jr., Root and Brush, Root, Colleen, and Julie. That's all.
And his wife is?
Ethel Brush. They separated now, too. Harry Brush had just one. Bobby was his name.
And what was his wife?
Grace Nolner was his name before she married Harry.
And then, Eddie Hildebrandt.
Yeah, Eddie Hildebrandt was Alice. Alice was his name.
What was her maiden name?
Alice Terry or something. I don't know. Or yeah, Terry, I think. Or I don't know her. I don't know her. Ida. Miranda. Eleanor and Barney. Yeah.
That's all of them.
Yeah.
Well, those are the three girls you said are living in Fairbanks?
Yeah.
And Barney is here?
No, he's gone.
Eddie, how much older is he than you?
Eddie?
Yeah.
Oh, he's way older than I am.
You know what year about he's born? Or
no,
much older?
No.
20 years.
Yeah, so he's about 62 or something right now.
So you might be 10 years older.
Yeah. And my brother Archer was married to his wife's name was Abigail Ambrose. And his son's name is Harold Kennedy. That's the only son he had.
Yeah. And then Rita?
Rita was, she was married twice. His name, her husband's name was Tony Patsy.
The first husband?
Yeah. And his daughter's name was, from the first husband's name is Edith.
Edith?
Yeah.
That was the,
Rita's daughter.
Rita's daughter with Tony?
Yeah. Angela was the next one.
Is that, that's with Tony?
Tony's too.
What's their last name now?
Patsy.
Angelina's Patsy, Edith's?
Yeah. That's on it, I guess.
Then she, her second husband.
Oh yeah, Gerald Smilka. And then now he had Annie. Annie Smilka was the first daughter she had. And then Josie, second one. Yeah, that's about it, that one too, I guess.
And do you know anything, any names of your father's, like her sister, his sister?
No, no.
You never got their name or address?
No.
You know, I'm really curious is if your dad had older brothers.
You know, he never told us anything about his sister or brother. All I know was he had one sister, must have been. She was living in San Francisco in... Her name was Sophie. That was the only one that we used to get a letter from while our dad was living. But after he died, we never did got a letter from. But this Fred Summers' brother living in San Francisco, been there all his life. He left here while he was a young guy. And he came up a couple of times and he told us that he see our aunt once in a while down there. She was pretty old at the time. But we don't know if she passed away or anything. Well, that's where we was going to go. Spring of 1930, fall of 1937. Down to San Francisco, you see. And that was the only one that used to get letter from my dad. My dad used to get letter. So she might have been just only one sister he had.
Maybe no brothers at all.
No, no brothers maybe.
He never talked about Japan at all?
No, he never did talk to about Japan. Well, he kind of ran away or something, you know. And he just...
What we found out a lot of times in Japan, the oldest son stays there, but the second oldest goes off someplace else.
Yeah.
That's real common.
Yeah, he never did told us anything. Yeah.
So you never knew if Sophie was married or had a different name or anything?
No,
like that.
Never did.
So there's no way we need to find
her. No way. Only the thing that he used to be using his last name for it on his letter is Akata, you know, Sophie Akata, you know. That's all he was putting on his letter on.
And he went by Jimmy, not James?
Yeah, Jimmy. That's how they used to call him all the time anyway, you know.
I was wondering, what was that restaurant that he said that he cooked at?
Gee, it was Fred, you know, that restaurant. Well, he was a cook in here, in a trading store here, Russell's place. Pop Russell was a trading store here. And he kind of run a restaurant for a Pilgrim, you know, Pan American. Used to be flying between here and Nome, you know, carry mail. Before, and we didn't see them cooking, but that's the way the old people used to tell us. But he was a cook there, and then he was a cook around First Yukon on the bar, on the riverboat. That's how he worked himself down this way, you see. That's where he worked himself down this way. He used to cook, and where he was a cook then. And he used to cook for my mother lots for us. And he used to pick up wild spinach. I don't know. He used to just go out around town, pick up some kind of wild stuff. You know, spinach he used to cook. But he used to really cook that stuff for us.
Is that the kind that grows tall?
Yeah, Yeah.
It grows in gardens a lot.
Yeah. But boy, he used to pick that up every day. Every day in the park, he used to feed us a lot of rice. We used to eat.
Yeah, I think that's the stuff they call lamb's quarter.
Yeah, I think so. But we had to done it the cheapest we can live, you know.
Well, that's good tasting.
Yeah, good tasting food. That's right.
So. When he cooked on the steamboat for the...
Yeah, he cooked on the riverboat too.
Did you hear anything else about him up at Fort Yukon?
Well, that's where he used to cook in a restaurant, big restaurant, I guess. And that's where he started, got on the boat or something like that. Well, if this guy was living, this Jack Patsy, I guess he used to work with him or seen him working. If he was living here, we would have got him here, and he would have told us more about him. When he first saw him, he was cooked, you know. But that's the way he started out, he said.
You ever heard about when he first came into the country, how he came
in? Never did. He never did tell us anything about that. When we used to even stay out in the camp alone, all till Christmas time or anything time. He never tell us anything.
What kind of things would he talk about?
Just preaching to us, you know, just like traps. And all he does is just trapping and just come home. And, well, him and my mother, they talk, but, you know, we were just playing, that's all. You know, we just didn't pay any attention to it. But, like, before he goes out in the morning, he tells us he knocked down a big wood out in the woods. And he tells us, well, you guys cut up enough wood before he gets back. Cook for dogs. We had four dogs. And one time me and my brother, he built us a little sled, little kid sled, and we were having a lot of fun. That was the first sled we ever had, we earned. We were sliding down like heck down the bank. I still remember that one. And he was coming home, and we had enough wood cut from the day before. Check the wood, no wood cut. Boy, we got a pedal on our butt that day, man. And the sled was taken away from us. We're not cooking for the dogs, not cutting wood. There was no chainsaw or no sweetsaw them days. It was them bucks, you know, them one man saw. We had to cut that wood with it. We cut wood, got through. No sled for a couple of days, though.
So he was pretty strict with you then.
Mm-hmm. Well, even out camp, we were out camp. 10 o'clock was our bedtime. We can't pass that 10 o'clock. 10 o'clock, we just had to be in bed. And if we come into town for Christmas or some kids running around, dance, 9 o'clock, back in the house.
Well, you said you went way out the Anoka with him in the wintertime?
Yeah, we were small then. We stayed out the whole winter that time. And he caught a lot of beaver, and he was using net. Well, he was making net too, you know. I don't know how he net. Yeah, he was using net. Harry Brush was with us then, my brother. And he didn't know how he used to do it, but he still done it. Well, he caught a lot of beaver, but it was cold. It was cold, and he had pack sack, and he had string right across to hold the strap away from his shoulder too tight, you see. You tie a string right across here, and that's when he froze his lungs inside. Breathing with that cold air, trying to come home with the packing with that two beaver. And, you know, when you're packing heavy, you're breathing hard. Breathe all that cold air in, and just froze his lungs. I don't think that poor guy could have walked out from here to the bank without stopping, taking a risk after that. He said that pain just hit him so badly, he just had to stop and rest. But he had to keep doing that just to make a living for us.
So when did that happen, that he froze his lungs?
I was small then, though, but he told us about it, though. We stayed over there all winter that time. I don't know what year was that. We were pretty small then at the time, but I still remember quick that time, though.
You mean he was still out trapping like that after he had frozen his
yeah,
bones?
Yeah, he had to. There was no hospital them days. There was hospital, all right, but he could guess, you know. So that's just what got him right across through this island here after he went down that bike, you see. You can see him coming home from trapline. We were down here at 9 miles. My wife's homestead now. You can see him up. There's an island behind there. It goes up in that one slough there. And you see him coming out of that slough, and you'll see him about, I don't know how many times, stopping, taking a break, standing to relieve that pain. And then he walks again, stop, walks again, stop. That's how hard he was painting, I guess. As soon as he comes home, he just lays down the whole evening.
Well, so summertime, where would you be?
Well, we were staying right down here at 9 miles. That's on the other side where we got kingnets now. We used to have cabin there. In summertime, that's where we used to fish for kings or some kind of, we were using nets, that's all then at the time. So we had, that's where we used to partly stay for near year round.
Well, did he do a lot of things different ways? Did he kind of invent his own ways of doing things?
No, not that much. You know, he just kept trapping, and he dug up a garden down there, and he tried a few different things, but it didn't work, and I guess. Well, he never hardly tell us anything, you know. We just try to learn. We were too small anyway. We just wanted to play all the time.
So when he died, you were what, about 11?
Yeah, something like that. Because we came down, we moved up to the spring camp, we came back down and they had the burial, and then we went back up, and that's the spring, there was flood, 1930s. That was the first flood. Well, we had it rough that time. You know, there were people was moving around, couldn't have hardly chance to hunt. And everything was all disaster pretty near in this village. The whole village were down here at 2 miles to dry out their places and clean up their places. We were living way back town then at that time. We had a house.
Maybe you could explain a little bit about what the village was like then. So it wasn't right here at this site.
37?
Yeah.
The village is the same way as in 1937, right now.
Right now.
Yeah, that's just the way it is right now. Just never change. But the school, that's all. It got bigger. And right where my place is, where I'm living right now, that mission, where the mission is, that's where the old school used to be. 2-story building there. And that was torn down. And then they put another 2-story building there. The mission put another 2-story building. But the partition off classroom there, you know, but there was 3 nuns teaching us there. We were burning wood in the school there. But the traders were burning, there was 3 stores at the time, but the traders were burning wood too, you know. So that's when my mother was, they were cutting birch or greenwood, they call greenwood. Maybe 4.5 a quart, they haul it out and buying grub. With it. It was rough.
4.5 is what you get paid for that?
Yeah.
Now people won't do it for $100.
Nowadays, I offered $100 last fall. 5 quarts of wood. As soon as you land it and pile it, I'll give you $500. You still wouldn't take it.
Do people cut wood and
oil? That's what they do, yeah. That's what they. Why I'm burning oil now, next year I'm going to burn wood because I couldn't afford to buy oil anymore. Well, that 1 year while I was working like this every day, and when we first bought this place from the mission, that house I'm living in, we were burning wood. I got a full basement house there. There's a basement, stove down the basement, and I got heat ducts running from every room, and I was going to burn wood there, but for about 5 or 8 inches diameter, 5 or 6 sticks, They start charging me $12 a loat. They call it a loat, and it's not even 8 feet. Some of them is about 5 feet, 6 feet. And they were charging me $12 a load. So I told my wife, it's cheaper to burn oil than buying wood every day. So he said, it's up to you. So we start burning wood, oil. But next year I'm going to burn wood, I guess. I might, if I'm just going to wait for a drift to come down and see if I can pull in enough wood for next winter.
Well, do you have to go a long ways for wood? In the winter?
Well, they go about 4 or 5 miles to get load of dry wood. You got to go across the river on the other side to the mainland and haul wood. And sometimes they go down here to Nine Mile Island and hauling wood there. But now, like the way I said, it's so easy. It's not like with dogs, you know. When we used to make a living with dogs, you come back from trapping and you got to haul wood, get enough wood for how long, you, how many days you figure to be out. And by the time you're ready to go back, you make 2 loads a day with dogs. And them days we used to pull in a big load of wood with dogs compared to nowadays what they're pulling with snow machine. And we'd say we'll rest our dogs 1 day, at least 1 day, and then we go back again. By the time we come back from our trap line, the wood is gone again. So you start all over again. But now these last few years, we start getting wood from between here and Galena. Say about, you go about but halfway to Galena, over halfway. You pass Bishop Rock up here, and there's an island there. That's where everybody gets wood. You raft it down. Well, you hopefully that you make it through the winter with that. Sometimes you don't get enough to make it through the winter with it. And then you got to start hauling wood. You know, like snow machine, it's so easy. You just start up your snow machine and just run there and come right back. And you can haul wood all day and dogs are not tired, you know.
Well, when you talk about going out to your trap line and getting wood, that's when your family's still here. And
yeah. You see, like when kids are going to school now. It was not like long ago. Now you couldn't take them kids out of school. Long ago, that's how they used to take us out of school, you see. And there was, we can stay out the whole winter. Nobody wouldn't bother us because we had to make a living. No food stamps, no ADC them days. Now there's food stamps, ADC and everything comes in now. Well, heck, the kids can stay right in town and learn if they want to learn, you know. Make a use of it after they get out of school, not to loaf around. That's what burns me up. Now the people there having so easy.
Well, in a lot of them, before 37, was there a time when the village was in a different place?
No. It was just, from the time I start to remember, it's just right here.
I think ever since late 1800s, it was right here.
Yeah.
How about down there at 2 Mile, you know, at the Milan River? Is there camps down there?
Yeah. I heard there was, you know, I don't know. There was, if you talk to them older people, they will tell you more about it like that one. I don't know that part. But there's graveyard between here and the Milan River and down 2 Mile, you know, that's where the graveyards are. But I don't know, but I heard some, well, you know, I couldn't understand them, high words of them, native words, you know. People talking lots about it, but I couldn't understand them, see.
I wanted to work on the rest of your family tree.
Drowned it right in front of the slough out here while she was just a baby. So I don't know her mother's name.
Esther's mother drowned when she...
Yeah, she was, while Esther was just a baby. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing where I heard it, but I didn't know her last
name. So who raised her?
Ambrose.
Which Ambrose is
that? Yeah, Esther Ambrose, if she's going to, that's, I think that's the way she used to take it, Esther Ambrose.
People she was raised by, it was just Ambrose or no first name?
That's what, no first name.
That's before they had the two names.
Yeah.
then did she have any brothers or sisters?
Esther? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that she had. Well, the ones that I can remember is Stan Ambrose, Harry Ambrose, Anita Ambrose, Frank Ambrose, and Philip Ambrose, and Humphrey Ambrose. Yeah, that's, and Abigail Ambrose, and Polina.
Polina?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the one that was on her sister's day.
Polina was the sister?
Yeah.
A lot of them. And then she married McGinty. What was his first name?
Francis McGinty. That's the way they used to call him. That's.
You know his mother, father?
No. Francis Malka brought her up. Harold Smalka's claim brought her up to Cayo just about a couple of weeks ago. She just can't stay away from that place. You know, Harold built her a nice little house up there, you know, 12 by 16 plywood house. And so she's not living in the tent now. You know, she's staying in the house. And so she loves it, to be honest. I'll be going up probably all this weekend to go up. Check on her and see how she's doing.
She's up there by herself?
No, she's up there with Luana and her daughter and her husband there, Luana's husband. They're staying up there now.
I have somebody said something about she wanted to be in a tent right here.
Yeah, yeah. Will let her have a piece of land, their tribe place, you know, to stay in the tent. And he's the one that's living with his daughter. Made a nice tent frame for her. Put up a tent. Everything. I tell her, well, my grandchildren go keep you awake, bother you all the time. Oh, he said, that's all right. She stayed there one night. That was it. She just stayed there one night. And she, well, you know, it gets too damp and cold in the evening for her, you know. And well, she, I guess people keep her awake, you know. She's right on the road there. Her house is right along the road there, where that Eddie's truck is, you know, that round truck is. You know where that Eddie, and on your right hand side, on your left hand side as you're going up, there's a porch there. That's her house right there. She lives in that one when she's here. And you know, snow machines and motorbikes and running around all night, and the poor old lady can't have rest, you know. So she just moved out, and now she's getting all the fresh air she wants up in Cayo.
But she wanted that tent so she could be out.
Yeah. That fresh air really do her. Harold Smalka was here for the wedding on this weekend. He said he flew over to the camp, and she was sitting outdoors in the box, enjoying herself. Yeah, she's old. She's the oldest one in the village now. She still get around good, though.
Must be in her 80s, I guess.
Over 80. She's pushing pretty close to 90 now. She used to cane and walk. See, if she wasn't crippled, you know, on her hip, she would get around good. But the hip bothered her, you know. There was, I don't know, she felt against a bed or something, somewhere. I guess there was some kind of a trouble, and she was going to get there, and he pushed her and broke her leg right here, right below the hip right here. And that's what crippled her up. She would have been really in good shape yet right now. Yeah.
Okay, I was wondering, when you talked about those 12 racks of fish that time you were
fishing down 6 months.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that All depends on how big rack you put up. You see, we the bigger the rack we put up, the more fish we can put on. We can put at least about 2,000 fish on it. You see, you just keep packing them fish. Sometimes you put 30, 40 fish on each pole. All depends on how long you can make your poles, you know. And then you just pack it. And then you just dry them. And you figure you put about 2,000 fish to 1,000 fish on each rack. Not less than 1,000 fish. Or if you have, the longer the stringers you get, what we call stringers, is the ones that we hang the poles on. The longer you make them, the more fish you put on it. And that you have to work like hell for that, because we didn't have no boat that day, you know, that time. We just had that little 12-foot boat, and we just had canoe, that's all. So we cut about 700-800 fish a day. But when I was building that wheel, I said, I'm just going to make a small box, and I'm going to make the whole to about 700-800 fish. So we have to cut that every day. We get to about 12 o'clock at night, me and my mother. Yeah.
Well, what about now? Are there many people who fish a lot for?
Yeah, well, like this summer now, the way with the rumors I hear now, I don't think they'll be buying fish, you see. They'll be just buying the roe. Now, we have to cut every fish that we're pulling the roe out of. And that's going to be get back to like when we used to do it for a living, you know, like cutting fish for our dogs. It's just going to be just like partly the same way again. You cannot reject them fish. You can't throw them away. You have to cut every one of them, what you get in your wheel, and hang them and everything. That's going to be a lot of work again this summer, just like you're going, just like getting back into them old days when you used to do it for dogs. And it's just going to be the same way.
You think they'll make eating fish with that? Or?
No, this, what we cut and what we leave out in the rain, the fish, you know, that's just for the dogs. That's for our dogs when we're cutting. Because we don't wash it. We just cut it and just throw it on the ground and let somebody keep hanging, you know. But the fish that we're going to use for ourselves, we got to take good care of it, put it out of the rain, and smoke it. So there's two different things we're doing with the fish.
You think maybe more people will smoke fish?
Yeah, well, every people that work at their for their eating fish, they call it eating, they take care of it. You see, you keep it out of the rain and keep it away from the sun, like some gonna cook it, you know, you keep it away from the sun, put it in your smokehouse, and then you gotta make sure the flies don't get to it and everything like that.
Early in the morning.
Yeah, that's the way we're doing right now. We're still doing it. We have, like, I get off at the 1st of July, take 2 weeks off for King Run, you know. We got to get up at least about 4 o'clock, go down to the net, come back, unload the fish, haul it up to the square, wife going to cut it. Then I take off again, run back down to the wheel, and then start hauling fish. Sometimes they gave us only 3 days a week last year now. So when the season opens up, we have to run 24 hours a day.
So you're fishing commercial?
Yeah. So, yeah, commercial, yeah. But like last year, it was rough. It was pretty tough last year. They reject a lot of fish back to us. You know, the inspector right from Seattle was right at the where they're buying the fish, and he inspected the fish. Pink fish and red meat, that's all he was taking. So by the time you hit the dock there to unload your boat, you stay there maybe a couple hours. And by the time your cutters, your fish cutters, are putting there getting through to bring another boatload of females to pull the row out. So if they're going to do that this year again, I'm not even going to. Hopefully, just me and the wife now, that's all we are now. My boy is working. I got no help now, so I'll just try to get some kids to help me to run the wheel. And if it's getting too hard, I'll just go after the King Run, that's all.
Well, Well, who was buying fish?
Sidney Huntington. And there was a guy came around about the middle of the season. He jacked up the egg roll to $3.50 a pound. We were getting 2.25 a pound for it before. But the switcher came down, found a buyer, I guess. And he raised it up to $3.50 a pound. So the buyer had to meet this, the other buyer's price to get some eggs.
So the price went up $3.50.
Yeah. So that was pretty good, like that you get more for your roe than. But you know what we were doing? There was somebody at the wheel, on the wheel, had a board, 2x8 across the box, and had a chute on the box of the wheel. And you're watching for males and females. If you get, you scoop up the male, you lift up the board and let the male scoop back in the water.
So somebody's right there at the wheel.
Yeah, boy, it's tiredness, really tiredness. It's awful. Well, I tried my kids like that, my boy. But I worried more about them than what I was trying to do. I had to be down there, going back and forth, down there with them. If I stay there myself, I don't worry about them. I know they're up there. I got the boat and everything there. But when you're using the boat, you got no boat with them.
So you're worried something might happen to
them. Yeah. You see, they might fall asleep there, you know, and it's just a boring. They're sitting on the wheel there waiting for fish to come off. And when the game commission seen it how we were doing it, and it wasn't hurting the fish or anything. It was just scooping right back in the river there. So we don't hurt the fish or nothing. The males, you know, just let it go back in the river.
People building them comfortable seats.
Get a
TV. Yeah.
Well, where does that row go to?
Oh, goes to Japan. Japanese stays right in the process in Galena where they process the fish. And they cure the eggs right there and they just keep shipping them out right there. That's, I never seen the plant operating though. But I guess the way Huntington got hard time to keep the crew going up there too, I guess, you know. Well, they have to go around the clock as long as the fishermen are going. You know, the fish are just going up steady. They're hauling the fish as fast as they're getting the fishes in and they're just hauling it into Galena and then processing it up there. And then the slimers, what they call slimers, clean the fish, you know. They have to keep going as long as we're going us too. And they're just working around the clock. So all the fishermen are going around the clock. They have to be going around the clock up there to keep up with us.
So he has to pay them pretty good to get
yeah. To do that. Yeah. I tried a kid last summer. He was just, well, I was getting tired, and the girls and everybody was getting tired down there. And he was just walking the street there. He came up with a load of fish, and he was there. Hey, Percy, can I hire you? Pay the same price as what these guys are getting. He said, sure. Okay. Tell him, get your, you don't have to take nothing. We got everything down there. I'll board you and everything. Just take your coat or ring gear or whatever you got. He said, well, he put on his wool clothes. I said, okay. Well, he said, I'll go 24 hours. Boy, he made me happy then. He said, when he said he's going to go 24 hours. So he started. By midnight that night, he was just curled up on the rocks back there. I asked him, what happened? Oh, he got tired. And he just went to lay down and went to sleep there. Then I let him, well, we had lunch there and woke up. I tell him, Percy, I thought you said he was going to go 24 hours. I always say it's too hard. And then, oh, I was paying him $10 an hour. And then, well, he didn't quite make a week, you know, the fishing season, 3 days of season. So he put in quite a few hours. But I told him, well, come around to pick up. I'll pay you anytime when you come around. Pick up your check anytime. Your check is already made in the house. He never did came around for a long time. Well, I was glad. I thought he was saving it, you know. Finally, one day he came in and told me, well, I need a little money. So I hand him his check. Look at that, how much you made in 3 days. If you stuck it out with me, look at how much you would double that thing. If I was you in your shoe at that time, I was raised up, getting raised. As young as you, I would go 20. I would never think of sleeping. I would be thinking of making that money, I told him. Look at that. If I made that much money, I don't know what I would do with it, I told him. And he just smiled and walked out. Yeah. Now, them kids, you know, they like working for wages, working around the fish. I heard them little kids saying, making $3,500. Boy, you know, that's surprising.
Doing what?
Just working around the fish.
Like sliming?
Yeah, hanging fish or anything. Made $3,500.
You mean working for people here?
Yeah.
Like Eddie, in a camp down river?
Yeah. Eddie had his grandsons working for him. Crazy. He said he cleared 5,000 one week, 4 days. Well, his grandsons were just there, day and night, putting there. And his grandson made 3,500. The other one made... he's still in high school. And the other one made 2,200. It's going to be awfully dangerous for the people, you know?
Yeah, going up there? Yeah, so much drift and stuff.
Yeah.
And still ice.
Ice.
I know there's lots of ice coming down.
Yeah, like under ice, you know, that black ice, you know, which you couldn't see, you know?
Yeah.
They hit it or punch a hole through their boat. Water is so cold now, you know? Gee, it must be about freezing point yet, that water right now, with all that ice on the river. And that's awfully dangerous if you happen to punch hole through your boat, you know, swamp and go down. Well, you've got no poor chance right now.
Because it's too cold.
Yeah.
That's another thing I want to ask you about. Life jackets, do people use them much? Like, hey, if they're not drinking, do they use them?
Well, yeah, that's what they're really after us, the game commission. They can just shut you right off if they catch you working on the wheel without a life jacket. Or if they catch you in the boat hauling fish without a life jacket, they can just shut you off right now.
That's a new rule?
Yeah, that's the new rule.
They came up with that this year?
No, that's been on for a couple of years now. Yeah, they really watch us. It's like if they go, like, they control this place between here and Caltech all the way to Galena by outboard motor boats now. They don't use planes. They just control it with the boats. Outboard
so
motor.
Who's that's controlling it?
Game Commission. Fishing game, yeah. They got camps along the river now, you know, where they work out of. You know.
So it's just commercial that they'd shut down if they don't have life vests? They'll
just shut you off for the commercial fishing and subsistence fishing.
Have they done that to anybody?
No, not yet. They never caught anybody yet. But it seems like every guy that's hauling fish, they're using life jacket, you know. Well, that's what we're using, life jacket, even when we're at the nets or anything, you know, even working on the wheel. And they put that out on their fishing license papers now, too. You've got to have life jacket, well geared up and everything to be going commercial fishing. Well, that's a better, good way, you know, to follow the rules, and that's protect us lots too, to be on the safe side, you know.
But a person, if they're not drinking, they want to use a life jacket.
Yeah. Well, every person in the village I know that should have got a life jacket anyway, but like if people got drinking, you know, he still don't care to use it hardly sometimes, too, you know. Like that one year, a couple of years ago, there was GIs, a bunch of GIs, just came out of about 6 miles below Galena, and it was rough. Water was high, no bank. And they had a little boat, I guess, and there was five of them in the boat, and they were trying to cross to the island, and they swamped. And they all drowned it. Just one or two. Yeah. One, that's all. Got saved, I guess. And you had still life jacket on. Oh, yeah, that one from Caltech, there was a boat coming down. And I don't know what it was doing around that long cut. And here was the guy hanging onto the snag. And then Wally found one body up here, floated against his wheel with a life jacket on. You know, them GIs was all drunk.
So they just never got to the bank with their life
jacket? Well, it was rough, windy, rough weather, big waves. And I guess they just got suffocated with the water, you know. The water was cold. And they didn't make it.
So maybe they passed on.
Yeah. But this one guy, the one that was saved, he couldn't even step in that boat. He was just trying to run away from this. Whenever they pulled him in, landed on the bar, he was just trying to run away from the boat.
Yeah. It's like it made him crazy or something?
Yeah, he just got off his mind, like, you know. But the one floated against Wally's wheel up here, he was floating high with his life jacket. And they found couple right above Bishop Rock, I guess, in that along that cut bank, floated right against the sweepers.
This ends recording for this session. We'll begin recording again here on number 117.